You don't grow up in my family without hearing about those promises. It was my great-grandfather Abraham who was the first to hear God say, "Go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." That's the kind of promise that changes a family. It changes your grandfather's stories. It changes the way your father raises you. It changes the way you see yourself. Some of my friends grew up being told they'd be farmers or shepherds or merchants. I grew up being told that God would bless the world through us. But this changed everything. This robe changed more than just my style. My older brothers knew I was God's favorite, but this was too much. This changed the way they looked at me. It changed every family dinner. It changed my whole life. Moses recorded our family biography, and he wrote about my dad, and he wrote about me in this robe, and he said, "Israel," that's my dad, "that he loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, and he made an ornate robe for me." And he recorded my brother's reaction too. They hated me all the more. They could not speak a kind word to me. The signs were all there. I just didn't know how to read them. And then came the dreams. The first one woke me up, a bit startled, freaked me out. I told my brothers about it because I knew the dreams meant something important. I told them, "Listen to this dream that I had. We were out binding sheaves of grain, and suddenly my sheaf stood upright, and all your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." And immediately they snapped. "Do you intend to reign over us?" they asked me. And it was just this hatred growing in them. But I wasn't trying to boast. I was only 17. And if there's one thing we all know is that 17-year-olds don't know when to stop talking. Then came the second dream. I had another dream, and this time in my vision, in my dream, I saw the sun and the moon and 11 stars all bowing down to me. I told Dad about this one. Not just the 11 stars, but the sun and the moon. My father rebuked me on the spot. "Will your mother and your brothers and I actually bow down to the ground before you?" Dad never forgot about that. It really got under his skin. He didn't know what the dreams meant, if or how they would come to be, and neither did I. But Dad knew that God had chosen our family to bless the world. Coincidences don't just happen around here. My brothers didn't care about the dreams. They didn't care what I had to say. They just wanted me to shut up. One day my father said, "Go out into the country and see if all is well with your brothers. Go out with the flocks and bring word back to me." I got directions from a man. He sent me out to Dothan where my brothers were, and I was eager to please. I was happy to help. When my brothers saw me from a distance, they must have said something to each other. "Oh no, here comes Joseph. Here comes that dreamer. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns." Didn't actually hear them. I just saw the looks in their face as I walked to them. A mixture of anger and relief. Like wild, hungry animals, as if they'd been waiting years for this moment. They tore the robe off me. They took the robe that made me special, the robe that made them furious, and they threw me into a pit. Literally, I was rubbish in the pit, left in a deep pit, dry and cold, and I begged, and I cried out for mercy, and I cried out for help. It was no use. I went quiet for a while. My brothers probably had dinner or something. And later I learned what they discussed. Apparently it was my older brother Judah who had the best idea. "What will we gain if we kill him? Let's sell him. Sell me." 20 shekels of silver changed hands, and suddenly I was no longer free. I was bought, someone else's slave. The traders, they led me away in ropes and took me to Egypt. My brothers didn't even pretend to be sad. They'd come up with this elaborate plan to get away with it as well. They killed a goat and they dipped my robe in the goat's blood and tore it all up, and they went back to Dad and they just said to him, "Recognize this?" My father wept for me. He knew that it meant I was dead. My father mourned for me, a son, and he vowed to keep mourning until he joined me in the grave. My poor dad. I was sold again, sold by the guys my brother sold me to, and I was bought by this wealthy, powerful Egyptian guy, a man named Potiphar. He was actually one of Pharaoh's top officials. And so I came to Egypt and everything was foreign. Language, culture, clothing, gods, social status, what was normal and typical. I didn't know the rules. I didn't know the dangers. But I knew one thing for sure. I knew what everyone else had given up on. I knew what my dad had given up on. But I saw it happening. Stuff was happening that no one expected. I was still part of God's plan. When everyone I loved and knew thought I was gone for good, God had not abandoned me. Moses recorded it like this in chapter 39 of my family biography. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. And his master, he saw that the Lord gave me success in everything I did. It was phenomenal. Potiphar noticed that God was with me, and so he put me in charge of his whole household. I was still a servant. It wasn't like being dad's special boy back at home. But for the first time since I was thrown in the pit, I felt useful. I felt blessed. I was busy and tired and stressed and I worked hard, but God was with me. And then she noticed me, Potiphar's wife. Anytime we were in the same room, it was awkward. It felt like she was kind of following me, like a bad smell, always popping up around me. Some of the other guys who worked with me, whenever she was nearby, would poke me in the ribs and say, "Hey, Joseph, look who it is." But it was no joke. One day she said to me when no one was around, "Joseph, Joseph, come to bed with me." And I refused and I said, "My master, Potiphar, he's not kept anything from me except you. How then could I do a wicked thing and sin against God?" But she kept coming to me day after day, "Joseph, Joseph, come to bed with me." And when someone powerful wants something, it's relentless. One day the whole house was empty. She grabbed me by my cloak and I freaked out and I slipped out of it. And I just ran and she just screamed. And I've never heard anyone scream like this before. All of a sudden she wasn't saying, "Joseph, Joseph." Instead, she was accusing me of sexual assault and she seemed to forget my name. She's calling me a Hebrew slave. She said, "He's been brought to us to make sport of us." She said that I came in there to sleep with her. And that's why she screamed. And Potiphar, he believed her. Everyone believed her. Of course they did. It's her house. And she was holding on to my cloak. Potiphar was so angry, he threw me into the prison where Pharaoh's prisoners were kept. It's the place for people whose lives were basically over. It's strange looking back. I was raised to expect that God would show up. I was the favorite. I had the special coat. I had the special dreams. It was rough when my brothers betrayed me, but I really thought God was with me again in Potiphar's house. Surely he's not with me now in jail. I never expected God to be with me in the cell. The written record of it all says it. Again and again, I remember it so clearly. While I was there in prison, the Lord was with me. God showed me kindness. He showed me favor. He gave me responsibility. He gave me success. Success in a prison cell. It sounds absurd. But that's where it all kind of clicked for me. That's where I realized that the promises of God didn't depend on my comfort. It didn't matter where I was or what position I was in. You can't look at your own comfort. You can't measure yourself by what is happening to you today. Right there in that dark cell, I learned to measure myself properly. I learned to judge my life by the promises of my God. God's faithfulness was not relying on me. I was relying on God's faithfulness. Months passed, maybe years. Then Pharaoh's cupbearer and his baker, they were thrown into the cell with me. And they both had these really weird dreams, more dreams. The baker looked terrified. The cupbearer was freaking out. I was confident that God was with me, and so I actually got involved in their drama. And I said, "Don't interpretations of dreams belong to God? tell me your dreams. So the cupbearer told me his dream first. He'd seen a vine with grapes that grew really quickly, and they were plucked and squeezed, and the juice was given to Pharaoh. And God made it obvious to me, so I said to him, in 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you. Then the baker told me his dream. He saw a basket of food on his head, which was for Pharaoh, and he saw birds coming in and eating the food out of the basket. I wish I'd never heard that dream. Ignorance is bliss, but I had to tell him what it meant. I said, in 3 days, Pharaoh is not going to lift up your head. He's going to take off your head. He's going to put your body up on a pole, and birds are going to peck at it. And it happened just like that. The baker was no more, and the cupbearer was restored. And as the cupbearer was leaving, I was so clear. I said to him so many times, remember me. Remember me. Mention me to Pharaoh when you get there. But he didn't. He forgot. 2 more years passed, and 2 years is a long time to sit in jail, especially when you haven't done anything wrong. But 2 years later, Pharaoh was having some dreams, would you believe it? And no one could interpret these dreams. 7 fat cows are eaten by 7 skinny cows. 7 full heads of grain are swallowed by 7 withered heads of grain. And suddenly, the cupbearer remembered me. He remembered the dreams guy. Apparently dreams are my thing. He remembered me. And before I knew it, Pharaoh summoned me to be before him. Joseph, a sold slave, a convicted prisoner, summoned to stand before the most powerful man on earth. And Pharaoh said, I've heard that you can interpret dreams. I had to be honest. I said, I can't do it, but God will give you the answer he desires. And so God gave me the interpretation. Pharaoh's dream meant that there would be 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh trusted my interpretation. He listened. He started stockpiling grain for 7 years of famine. And he was boasting to everyone about how the Spirit of God was in me. And Pharaoh was so impressed. Everyone was so impressed, so confident in me and my God, that Pharaoh would do the unthinkable. He was the only man with the kind of power. But he put me, this Hebrew kid who'd been thrown into a pit, in charge of all of Egypt. It was crazy. And I remember he said, only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. And I know what you're thinking. I've told this story for thousands of years. I'm not reading a script. This really happened to me. And this bit always gets the best reaction. Only with respect to the throne was Pharaoh greater than me. People are always really impressed that I had that much power. And I always ask people when they're impressed, when it comes down to it, who is more impressive, Pharaoh or me or God? This is my God's power. I don't care if you're my brothers or Potiphar or Pharaoh. Do not stand in my God's way. You've seen what he can do. And really, you don't have to stand in his way. God invites us to stand with him, to be on his side. I won't go over everything that happened afterwards, all the stuff during the famine. That's a story for another day. But I will say this. My brothers came back to me. The same brothers who took my robe, covered it in blood, tore it up and showed it to Dad. The same brothers who sold me and said, let's kill him. They came and bowed before me. Just like my dreams, but not out of fear. In their need, in the famine, they came to me in their desperation. And when the moment came, when my revenge could have been so sweet, I heard myself saying something I never would have imagined. If God hadn't brought me through it all, if God hadn't saved me from the pit, if he hadn't brought me through Potiphar's house, if he hadn't brought me out of the prison, I never would have said to my brothers, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. God intended to accomplish what's now being done, the saving of your lives. God keeps his promises to my great-grandfather Abraham, just as he has to me, and he will for you as well. I can look back at it all, every pit, every trap and turn, and say, God intended it for good. I get the sense that God can, at any time he likes, take people's bad intentions and turn them for good. Don't you? I wonder how bad someone's intentions could be that God would still use it for good. I wonder if one day God will take the most awful intentions, the most unimaginably wrong intentions, and use it for good to accomplish the saving of many lives. I wonder if next week, whatever washed-up modern preacher you guys get here, I wonder if they'll know more about what happened next with God's intentions. My story isn't about dreams coming true. I'm not the dreams guy. My story isn't about Joseph the hero. I'm no hero. My story is about a God who is faithful. What is your story about? Heavenly Father, we know that in all things you work for the good of those who love you, who've been called according to your purpose. If you are for us, who can be against us? You didn't spare your own son, but you gave him up for us all. Now won't you also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Oh, the depth of the riches of your wisdom and knowledge. How unsearchable your judgments and your paths beyond tracing out. Who has known your mind, Lord? Who has been your counselor? Who's ever given to you that you should repay them? For from you and through you and for you are all things. To you be the glory forever. Amen.